This is Nipawitamup, Nipawitam, podcast by the Lake Winnipeg Indigenous Collective, where we share those conversations about our relationship as Anishinaabe and Nehiya to the land and our sacred lake.
Scary in the prairies, and I'm trying not to stumble, cause I'm worried for the baby separated by a border and a racist military. Yeah, we've seen it all before, so it feels so ordinary. Canaries in the coal mine, freedom on the goal line. Mookum on a slash, earning feathers like the old time. Ready in the flash, you'll be traveling in no time. A beautiful death waiting for you at the sundown. And if they catch me, they can bury me sitting down and facing.
I'm Daniel Canoe, director of Lake Winnipeg Indigenous Collective.
So, really nice to meet you
again.
I'm Rebecca Sinclair. I'm the program coordinator for the Lake Winnipeg Indigenous Collective. So today we have Sadie Phoenix Lavoie. Speaking today on our podcast, we have asked her here to come and talk about two-spirit identity as it relates to environmental activism and a couple of other areas as we flow along with this conversation. So we thank you so much for being here, Sadie, and for Sadie Phoenix is we'll get into the addressing of how we like to address ourselves. So
nice to meet you. I'm happy to be here. Migazigaanawabanijige Adishnakas Seganinduji Miknaito Dem. So my spirit name is actually Looking Eagle. And I'm originally from Sagan First Nation, which Treaty One. And I'm a member of the Turtle Clan. But my name, English name, when given to me by my family is Sadie Phoenix Lavoie. I use Sadie Phoenix as kind of a blend between before I came out, I was known and referred to as Sadie, and to like now, Phoenix was always my part of my legal name. It was always my second name, but for me, it had so much meaning. It was given to me by my grandmother. And as I was coming out, I really wanted to bring that name in. And I didn't want to erase who I was, like, my history, I guess, before coming out. And so I combined the two as Sadie Phoenix. And so some people get confused, and it's, you know, it just takes a little bit of explaining. And I have some friends who just call me just Phoenix, and that's fine. My family members still call me Sadie. I actually have a cousin named Phoenix, so that's why it kind of gets mixed up sometimes. But overall, like, yeah, just Sadie Phoenix or Phoenix is fine with me. I do go by they, them pronouns.
Great. Thank you. I think it's really important to you. I think in society today, we don't often actually ask the person what they would prefer to be called in terms of name. Like, pronouns is becoming a little bit more commonplace, but naming is a little bit more complicated than that. And I even do that when I introduce myself as Rebecca Sinclair, and actually Osawe Musqua Squeyu. As I'm trying to practice my own language, right? And trying to practice those own ways of knowing and being. So I appreciate you clarifying that for us.
I feel like our names are usually one of the main entry points too for, you know, reclaiming our language and getting used to speaking in our language is, you know, introducing ourselves. I'm Anishinaabe, so I speak Anishinaabe Mo'in, but I've also started to learn some Cree and found out that I have like a little just in Cree on my great grandmother's side, who her mother was a Cree Métis baker. And so I've been trying to, learn how do I introduce myself in the Cree language versus just in Anishinaabe. And so that was kind of the way of getting used to, I guess, verbalizing my name and on a consistent basis. It's, just something that seems to work, help out a lot.
There's such a power in that too, though, right? Is addressing ourselves in not our English names. And I think that when we give space to that, it there's a power in itself.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you noticed, but I don't say like a Kwe or anything like that inside my introduction. One word that some people have said that they coined was Ogokwe or Inekwe, as a way of blending men, mask and femme identities, I guess, in the way that we pronounce. But for me, I feel like it just makes more sense just to like omit that section entirely, because as a, like a more Western commonly referred term as gender fluid, I kind of, you know, bound back and forth between either masculinity or femininity. So putting Kwe or anything like that in there, or having to change it up, it just seems like more confusing for other people who are trying to figure out, like, do I use she, they, or she, her, or do they, them, or he, him? And I was just like, you know what, just omit the whole thing. There's just too much confusion around it. Like pronouns, like gender language and gender pronouns, it was never really used in our language. And so I don't see it as like a thing that I need to figure out or coin a new word or, it's just, you know what, I can take it away and then be able to explain as to who I am as a person and, like, you know, outside of my introduction, you know, so I don't hold on to like a Kwe or an Inu or something like that in a way. That's just a little bit more clarification.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I think on the topic of pronouns, I think it'd be great to hear your perspective on the importance of addressing pronouns and why that that space is important. I know that while it's becoming more common, it's still a little bit, what's the opposite of common? Not common. it's still pretty new in our ceremonial circles to address the pronouns and how we go about doing that. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience?
I mean, like in the beginning, I was, you know, I wasn't too like, you know, I didn't feel like so invested in it at first, was because I think, you know, internally I was always like used to always being referred to as like her, she, and then it was after a while that I know that like people were being more attentive to like, what would you prefer, and because of everybody else having the conversations around pronouns, and I was like, you know, I'm not really too set on anything. I mean, she, they, them, like, you know, I wasn't gonna like go out of my way and like get mad at somebody for using the wrong pronouns in the very beginning. But at the same time, I wanted to like respect the fact that there's people out there that do, you know, hold a lot of like value into that, those pronouns, especially when wanting to be validated or recognized or seen. And I was, you know, acknowledging that. And so like me being lenient around the matter, like I didn't want to do, you know, undue indirect harm for somebody. Like if I was the only person first introduction as a two-spirit person from somebody who is like, you know, completely narrow-minded, like I was their first introduction to somebody who's like two-spirited, and you know, they didn't use my pronouns correctly, and I didn't correct them, they would continue doing that to somebody else. And so I was being more mindful of that, and I was like, you know what, like a language changes and adapts, even in our own languages. And so I was trying to find that understanding, I guess, as a way of like my role and responsibility to honor other people who use those pronouns, and to not be as lax as I was before. And so being more affirming as to like, you know, actually I am gender fluid, I do prefer, or not even just prefer, but like they, them, makes most sense. And so I just like flat out, because I wasn't being seen and wasn't being validated, and I started to realize why the importance of people using pronouns in the appropriate way, and to correct people, and that it didn't have to get hostile, you know what I mean? Because I think a lot of people were very, they would get afraid, they go to get intimidated by like if I disagreed, I guess. And so I didn't want people to feel like so nervous about getting it wrong at first. And so I was like, you know what, I wanted to have some type of transition, even with my name, like Sadie Phoenix. So like, I don't want people to feel horrible about getting it wrong the first time, but just taking that time of clarifying. And then eventually, you know, they start using the right pronouns. But then either way, like even my own personal opinion of being, you know, not as heavily invested in it. That's just my own personal thing, but I knew that speaking on these matters of two-spirited, that there's a lot of people there that do. Same with using the word Indigenous queer. I consider myself two-spirited, queer and gendered, but you know, other people don't recognize themselves in those terms and prefer to use something else, you know. And so respecting that there's a diversity within how people want themselves to be recognized and valued and validated as well. So overall, whenever somebody says that their pronouns are, you know, they, them, or they, he, or she, they, you know, I do my best to be mindful of that and try to correct myself. And I screw up sometimes too. You know, we're all kind of human in that sense. It's just a matter of just constantly being aware of it, rather than as lax as I was in the beginning.
Yes, I think about pronouns quite often because it's become a point of kind of debate when I don't think it should be. It should be more of a clarification or a reflective kind of piece, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I grew up north and I grew up in a small town and partly on the reserve. And this struggle of pronouns didn't really resonate within those communities and still is very seldom used today. So like as you come to more urban areas, you see that being more frequent, and I hope that we can start making organizational changes that resonate to those rural areas or those smaller communities or on reserve.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's the main point, is that you know, a lot of these conversations are happening in urban areas, and we're trying to figure out how we can, you know, support those that are on reserve, those that we, you know, haven't even met yet and are trying to support and connect with. Building these types of programs, you know, it's always like there's always so much institutional struggles that, you know, even we face here in the urban setting. So we can only imagine how astronomically more troublesome it is to receive supports on reserve. And so why it's even more important for us, other two-spirited leaders in the communities, to be able to reach that far, and to not be reliant on those types of organizations who don't do that work properly. You know what I mean? And to try to have these conversations with our communities. And it's really hard. It's really difficult because, you know, it's not like you're just having a one-on-one conversation. It's like you're having a conversation with multiple people, you know, your whole community. And where's your community? You know, the two-spirited community always having your back, and we try to support each other whenever things like that arise. Like if somebody's dealing with a situation with a family member back home, or you know, if it's the community, like chief and counselor or stuff like that, or if we hear stories of violence that's being inflicted, like that, we feel that here in the urban settings. And so we need to be able to figure out ways of better doing a better outreach and to better education, to a lot of people back home. And so, I take every opportunity to go talk to the schools that, like back in Seguin, they've invited me out there a few times to talk about Two Spirit, and bringing Red Rising in. They even had like the chief and council brought me in one time I can't remember what it's called, but it's like they shut the schools down for like the entire day, and then they have like a career day type deal. And so they brought us in there, and I just remember like people were always so like curious. I think people are open-minded. I think it's just a matter of like providing that introduction and in a good way to like explain why pronouns are important, why we need to decolonize and carve out space for two-spirited people in our own communities. Because either way, I think it's happening already. Like there's things happening on social media, like young people are finding each other and trying to find that support, but they're not being seen, and they're not being fully like valued to the extent that they should be in the communities. And I think we get caught up on these pronouns, and it doesn't allow us to break through and have larger discussions around community roles and governance, and you know, the roles that two-spirited people had traditionally to how we are incorporating them now into our communities as we are trying to, you know, decolonize. And that there's so much wisdom and so much knowledge and so much experience that of you know, resilience and overcoming and support and the lessons around compassion and lessons of love that aren't being shared right now because of people who are just caught into this, I don't want to respect your pronouns, you know, and they don't see the value that this two-spirited Indigenous queer community can provide and give to the community, or even just to be without having to be, you know, have violence inflicted on us. And so, and a lot of people are just, they overlook that violence. And the sad thing is that the young people see that. They see that other people don't care enough. And it makes them feel very isolated, even more so isolated, away from even urban centers, from who, like people who are out and, you know, are embracing their identities and expressing themselves. And they see that, and then they're in their communities and their families don't, and they won't, you know, give them that space to breathe, to live as who they're meant to be. And so there's an incline of suicide crisis in a lot of communities. And, you know, the communities are shocked and figuring out, why is this happening? Like, what can we do? And it's like, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on that you just haven't been paying attention. And a lot of people have been vocalizing this issue for a long time, for decades, if even from the HIV crisis in the 1980s, around for like Native people, Native LGBTQ. We've had gatherings constantly. So it's just now that it's becoming in the forefront and a huge issue, and as sad as it is that people, young people, you know, taking their lives in order for people to realize that they've been causing harm this whole time. And so in order for our communities to be healthy, we need to be tackling this on head on. Because there's so much value and so much beauty that two-spirited people offer to the communities that could heal our own communities. It could be answering so many of questions that have been left unanswered for so long. It's just as long as they were able to, you know, do their own internalized homophobia and transphobia and doing that work in order to create safer communities. But yeah, they get stuck on these things. I don't think they realize how much it permeates like a toxic environment for a lot of young people. And they feel like they have to flee and they need to leave and go to the cities, which also just increase more vulnerabilities as well because of lack of access to good work or to schooling or to violence, racism, on even a higher level from multiple communities and not just their own.
I was just thinking, like, when I first started hearing term like pronouns, even like they and them and their, and first it was unfamiliar, right? And that I was found myself sometimes like even afraid to say things or whatever, didn't want to mess it up. But when it came down to it, it's like it just had to do it, right? And as you start doing it, you get it.
It's easier. You don't think about it the same way.
Not a big deal. It's not. Yeah, it's not actually unusual. It's just a new word that I had to learn. Right? And how I think of how like the idea of practice, of
of just doing things as a way of learning and getting better and for what was maybe what at worst awkward for me was something that was violent for others, right? And like starting to hear those stories that was really obviously made sense of that, something I had to change in myself, right? So and what a small change I had to make. but I'm wondering, like, we set up as like as a collective, we're trying to make sure this is inclusive, like this is something that all people can come to connect with our traditions, and so do you have any sense of like what are some things that we can do with some better practice we can do like as an organization make that a safe space for Two-Spirit youth?
Well, like you said earlier, like the pronouns are always the main thing, and I think there's a lot of ways that organizations have been trying to fully adopt that into like their normal rhetoric on a consistent basis. And whenever people like say having a gathering and like sharing circles and stuff, like we'll just start using that as the check-in, like just what are your preferred pronouns, introduction, or not even preferred pronouns, but what are your pronouns and how do we and making sure that if somebody slips up, just a kindly reminder, like, oh, I didn't know that they went by she, they, or she, her. And then they're like, oh, let me fix what I just said and refer them as they, them, for instance. I think being comfortable being corrected and to interject when somebody else, you acknowledge that somebody else got some miscorrected, like, oh, just wanted to flag that there, and so that they're mindful in their head to do that work. But that's always just like step one, right? Like is acknowledging who the person is, and then after that it's listening to what they're saying. And a lot of Two-Spirit people are very vocal as to what they don't like. And I think that helps us as organizations or as community to figure out where we need to be directed is, because a lot of times we don't know where we want to end up. We don't know the outcome. We don't know, like, this is what we have to do. Like, well, we know what we don't like, and hopefully we'll use that as a way of getting us to where we want to go in regards to Two-Spirited. But Two-Spirited people and what they say in their voices, like if they want a seat at the table, if they need to vocalize how the experience plays out from whatever institution that they're dealing with, like if they're talking about like education, how are we educating Two-Spirited people, and how are other people being educated about Two-Spirited people? Because the education that we receive, like, it may not be as useful to us, but it may be useful to other people. You know what I mean? The other thing is like figuring out how are we carving out, like ensuring that the people that we are working with as an organization hasn't done harm either in the past, and has, or if they refused accountability, how are we making sure that we're aware of some of the dynamics that play out. And that's the tricky part, because it takes a lot of consulting with communities. A lot of Two-Spirited people, we will communicate amongst each ourselves as to who's a violent person or somebody who's refusing accountability. And, we try to like warn folks, this person's a predator, or this person, is a violent person against, and just a queer LGBTQ Two-Spirited community. When somebody like addresses that, we don't want you to like incorporate them into an event because it could cause harm, being able to respond in a good way and say like, yes, we acknowledge that we were unaware of like something like this happening. And basically just, stand in solidarity with Two-Spirited people when something like that does arise. The other thing is letting two-spirited people hold leadership positions within the organization, because, you know, we always get asked how to help, how to incorporate, you know, a more welcoming environment for two-spirited people. And, you know, when two-spirited people are like leading, you know, a lot of that happens like naturally, you know what I mean? And instead of having to, I was trying to teach others how to do it when two-spirited people can just do it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of two-spirited people were always asked for a lot of our insights, a lot of our knowledge and wisdom, which we do hold and carry, you know, but it's always like, let's just check this off our box. We could talk to you and everything that we do here on out is now going to be inclusive. And that's not always the case. And so having, you know, a two-spirited person within an organization, not just to tokenize them, but like to for them to have that authority and power to say, hey, if something is going on or something has been flagged, that they're able to be supported in dealing with that situation by the organization. So that's just one part, few parts, I guess, that I can think of right now, is giving two-spirited people more jobs in organizations so that they can actually do that work, because they know what to do and have been doing it already.
Let's dig into that a little bit more. I feel like as an Indigenous person, we're often found in a lot of situations where we become the barrier, the carrier of being the Indigenous spokesperson in different organizations. And I think that this comes dangerously close to that kind of conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Where we want to change organizational needs, but at the same time, are we putting that load on one person? Are we making them carry this? Like, I guess it goes to that emotional labor of having to speak for a whole group of people. And like, how do we, like specifically for the collective, how do we combat that? And how are we opening up our minds? Is there resources out there that we should be looking into and digging deeper into to expand our own organizational shortcomings?
Yeah, I mean, like, not towing in the line of like tokenizing, but like ensuring that, you know, instead of having like, you are the two-spirited representative, you'd be like ensuring that there's two-spirited people like in all facets of like whatever you're engaged with, you know, and making sure that, because representation does matter a lot. But to know that what they're saying is not just valued because they're two-spirited, but because like as two-spirited people, they have so much to share in so many other avenues and other and various areas that are additional to what the organization's trying to achieve. And, you know, the outcome ultimately, like how I see whenever two-spirited people are being like, you know, they're getting that financial support of, you know, being able to work and having security, you know, that takes off so much stress for a lot of two-spirited people who are dealing with a lot of things, who are still heavily involved in their community, who are still responding to other crises. And so I think creating an environment within the organization that understands the realities of two-spirit experiences. And that to me is more meaningful than just having a two-spirit position. But acknowledging that, you know, need to be hiring more two-spirited people, and two-spirited people need to, you know, be valued for what they offer. And that we have so many gifts and skills to do. And I don't know, I just, yeah.
It really just goes without saying though, right? That we should be creating these positions in these places that are safe. I think society is really slow on this uptake. But the conversation has to start somewhere. And I appreciate your candor on all that you've given us so far on and making sure that we organizationally are doing the same. I know, like, in my own ignorance, I'm going to admit that in my own ignorance, I've had struggles with using pronouns, and a lot of it stems from, like, I don't want to be labeled.
Mm.
And but then again, that's a struggle that I need to acknowledge, right? Is that just because I don't want to be labeled, it doesn't mean that's not a safe thing to do for others, and acknowledge and create, a good.
Yeah, I think, like, naturally humans, like, we all have, like, a little tendency to be selfish sometimes. Like, I think we all have that. And a lot of times, sometimes when we get corrected, we don't see that how the outcome could be beneficial to us. But ultimately, like, how to get past that is saying, you know, like, wouldn't you want to be in a community where everybody's feeling safe and free and open to share? Because why would you want to be in a community where somebody's being silenced or somebody else is being repressed or oppressed in some way? It may not directly affect you, but it directs the entire community, which thus still affects you. Because then the community as a whole is still not healthy. The community cannot be healthy if there's one aspect of it that's being neglected. And that's been two-spirited people for so long. And it's now that we're trying to address that. If you want to decolonize, you want to address these things, you need to be incorporating us. You need to be listening to the words that we're saying, the directions that we want to take. And if it may be uncomfortable, but, like, acknowledging the fact that two-spirited leadership includes everybody. You know, the work that we do is helpful for everybody. So if we get that support and guidance, it's only going to come back to the community and to you ultimately, you know? But there's just some things that we need to ensure in order for us to feel open and safe to do that work. And part of that is the pronouns. Part of that is ensuring a safe working environment, ensuring that when issues are raised, that they're being held to account, or that, you know, there's a procedure of accountability that is transparent and open for input and for changes. You know what I mean? And so that to me would give me a good environment, you know, to work in. And because, for instance, like Winnie Skatan, I would try to address certain things, like with people saying, like, my pronouns. And then it took my boss checking in with me and saying, like, hey, I noticed people weren't using your pronouns. Do you want me to correct them? And I'm like, yes, you can. You know, you don't need to have that permission. Like, you can just do it. When somebody's saying, like, hey, I noticed somebody else wasn't doing this, I just want to check in with you, can I correct them? And it's like, you don't need to ask me if it's okay to correct somebody for being violent, just go ahead and do it. And I think people get really hesitant about how they can support. And really, it's a matter of, like, well, if somebody was, you know, addressing, if, like, I try to think of it like an analogy, it would be like, yeah, if somebody was not acknowledging and saying, like, if somebody said you're a Cree, but you're Ojibwe, like, you want somebody to say, hey, that person's not actually Cree, they're actually Ojibwe, you know, like, it's just, it shouldn't be so nuanced, it shouldn't be so, like, such a big thing. It's just part of, like, practicing, yeah, safe space, and ensuring that, you know, those things are stated, that anything outside of, you know, you know, this is what we won't tolerate, and these are the consequences. I think people should know that too. That if you get corrected and you still do it wrong, like, maybe this needs to open up for a further conversation. You know what I mean?
Yes, for sure. So I'm wondering now, let's dig deep into, what does two-spirit kind of mean to you, and how does that resonate with Indigenous ways of knowing? I don't think that a lot of people are familiar with what two-spirit actually means.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could give us some perspective on that.
For sure. And, like, I love talking about this, because, like, I was always, like, really excited, you know, as I was coming into, you know, coming out and learning about what two-spirit means. And, like, two-spirit is, like, a modern coined term. It actually originated in Winnipeg in 1990 during at the third annual Interchangeable Native American First Nations Gay and Lesbian Conference. And Myra Laramie, she's an elder of mine, who was at this gathering, had a dream and shared this dream at the gathering. And so it was at that gathering where they decided, she had said something about, you know, it comes from Anishinaabe Mun, like Nij Manitouag, which means two-spirit. And she was trying to explain the dream that she was having. And that was the way that she could explain. It was saying that it seemed as if there was two spirits merged in one. And that, you know, it was a lot of tied to like gender. And she knew that people were using it as like an umbrella term after that, and basically just took it and like kept going with it. And she was just like, whoa, like, I didn't think that that was going to happen. But, I think a lot of people felt that they needed to attach the spirituality component with being two-spirited. That wasn't being shared by the broader LGBT community, which was dominated by a lot of like white gay males, white cis males. And so, you know, as two-spirited people, we always knew that there was that superior spirituality component to it that wasn't addressed, that could only be explained or felt by another Indigenous person, which is why two-spirit is reserved for Indigenous only. And so I was wanting to, like, for me, my journey was trying to figure out what that looked like, you know, what is our community role and how we can, you know, push and recreate that space and reclaim space ultimately, that we have always had, because I knew that people were having conversations around, you know, what is our communities outside of the Indian Act look like? How can we be supportive for young people? And like, they are all talking about these different issues. And I kept seeing this like underlying thread of like two-spirit spirituality and identity that wasn't talked about, wasn't being, you know, figured out. And for me, I wanted to do more history. So ultimately, you know, it was to create space within the LGBTQ movement for Indigenous folks. But, you know, I wanted to acknowledge that there's over 200 recognized languages that use terms that would refer to somebody as two-spirited, which something nobody knows. Like, we don't know that we actually have our own languages that describe two-spirited people or Indigenous queer. And that we have just been using these terms as a contemporary way to not create a pan-Indigeneity, but to acknowledge that we within our own communities need to do our history and learning work and figuring out what has been lost, because there's so much has been lost since, and things have been rewritten and retold, excluding us, including our creation stories. So historically, two-spirited people, we performed a lot of social functions. We were active as healers and medicine people. We were handling and burying of deceased. We were considered like undertakers or grave diggers. We conducted a lot of mourning rites and rituals. We were conveyors of oral traditions and songs. We were nurses during war expeditions. We were recognized as foretellers of the future or premonitions. We've given lucky names, or given names to children and even into adults. We made a lot of artwork, including pottery, beadwork, quillwork, or woven work, and we arranged marriages. We made feather regalia or headdresses, also certain special dances. We had certain skills for games. We led a lot of dances, including the scalp dance, which I found, which is interesting. And then another thing that I thought was really important that a lot of folks don't know is that we were actually one of the main special functions in connection to the Sundance. We were considered to be the ones setting up the central pole or the central tree for the Sundance, that we were part of that. And that the central post of the Sundance actually represents, you know, the human being, but all that was our place, the center. And I want to talk a little bit more how that like plays into our creation story. So basically we took on a lot of roles, such as chief, our counselor, but we were hunters, trappers, fishers. We dealt things with warfare, raiders, we were guides. We led peace missions. We took people out on vision quests. Seen as like a lot of prophets, I guess that's a Western term, but the one thing I also learned was that the petroforms or the petroglyphs along trails, like we were the first people to kind of go into, because we were the conveyors of traditions and knowledge, and we actually the ones who made the petroform or petroglyphs like along the walls on our trade routes, to remind people and to share our stories and to mark pathways. I thought that was amazing. I was like, wow, that's something you don't know, is that the people who are actually writing on the rocks are two-spirited people. And that's one of our main things that we try to interpret as we try to figure out, you know, our history. So one thing that with gender and two-spirited people is that we never associated a gender to babies when they were born. We waited until they were older before we gave them a separate name that was more directed towards who they were as a person. So a lot of times people who were given names at birth, that those changed over time. And so actually having a new name for what I wanted to represent myself as Phoenix is actually a normal, natural thing that we did a long time ago, was that as soon as you were older, your name represented who you were versus the name you were given, which I thought was really really interesting. And so that also just depended on, like, you know, your inclination towards masculine or feminine, or either intersex at the end. But a lot of the times this happened during puberty. And, you know, like they weren't told this is what you need to do, but we're just waiting to see what choice that they would make, the youth and kids, that they were, the actions they took, and the choices that they chose to make for themselves, which I thought was really cool. And one thing that, so the creation story that I was trying to share was featured in one of our magazines, Red Rising, the issue 7 True Spirit by Chantal Fiola. And I just want to quote, said, early in human history, there emerged human beings that displayed curiosity for knowledge and an ability for compassion that set them apart. They can love in ways that others couldn't. Spirit chose them as spiritual ceremonial knowledge carriers and tasked them with keeping community together, among other things. But there have been times in human history when humanity had forgotten the original instructions Creator had given us for Minabamatsuin, which is also known as the good, healthy, balanced life. The beings who were not like the others brought reminders of Creator's instructions. These were called the Nawe Nanguayabeg, those in the center who keep others from wandering. And end quote. So that was one of the creation stories that Chantal Fiola was writing in our magazine that I thought was really important to share. You know, those in the center who keep others from wandering, and how that signifies to our ceremonies and Sundance and the struggles that two-spirited people still to this day have in accessing ceremony. You know, everything about our ceremony is tied to two-spirited people, but we're one of the main people who are excluded from it. You know, a lot of our ceremonies are binary, you know, the men's side, the female side. And that's not normal. That's something that was introduced and influenced onto us, because of residential schools and things like that, where, you know, we were separated and told we're not allowed to mix. And gender is a colonial construct. And so even our ceremonies need to figure out a lot of these protocols that are man-made ultimately, that were, you know, inflicted by colonial influences, and unfortunately that's just the reality. And a lot of leaders, ceremonial leaders, find it really difficult to change. And so the result of that is being two-spirited people not being able to access ceremony. The other creation story that this one's a quote from Alex Wilson, which is in our coming in stories, create identity, body sovereignty, and self-determination, gender self-determination, which we had also like talked about in Red Rising. Says, quote, our creation story takes us back to the stars. An essential figure or character is Wasegajek, represented by the constellation other people call Orion. A trickster and a teacher, Wasegajek shifts gender, form, and space to playfully teach us about ourselves and our connection to the wider universe, lands and waters, living things, and each other, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, two-spirited people have always been there from the very beginning. You know, we always see that the, like, when we talk about our creation story of the woman falling from the sky and she was pregnant, who's to say that she wasn't two-spirited, or her children were two-spirited as well, and that that was just the start of it all. But yeah, I guess the impacts of colonialism has really done a number on our communities. And, you know, there's so much heteropatriarchy that is in the Indian Act still to this day, that we need to talk about. Yeah, I don't know, I'm going on a huge tangent now.
No, it makes sense. I mean, it feels like it's such a good, I like how powerful that, the name two-spirit is, because it's like it reminds us of those roles that have always been, that it wasn't, it's not something that we is new really, that we're, even if like it was a new term, right, that but it kind of brings us back to what we need to be doing, which is waking up, I suppose, right? Like not just relying on this the colonizer for their ways, right? And that's like thinking about that with the like thinking of like just environmental justice as well, like that's a whole, there's a whole other world there, like what mm-hmm. what's that experience, I know you've been involved in, what's that experience been like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that like I naturally came into this position as a community person who does this work. I don't like the term activist because I feel like it always gets mixed up with things, and same with protester. I'm just like a community advocate who does activist work or does those things. Like I don't like being labeled in that way, unless it's incorporating like the fact that I'm trying to advocate for community. And part of that is, you know, organizing, or speaking or educating. And, as I was going through my own healing journey and coming out and addressing my own internalized issues, you know, I was not surprised that I was coming into my own, as somebody who has a role within community as a two-spirited person. And that things just started making sense. I was like, oh, that's why I do that. Oh, that's why. Once I started learning the history as to like why all the things that we do, or like historically, and trying to apply that in a, you know, modern sense, how, you know, that's why I'm not surprised that I'm like, I address so many issues over the years, and I've continued to do that, and I will. I'll continue to do that. But what's surrounding a lot of the things that I do is always around the environment, around addressing climate change, talking about respecting water, honoring our ancestors and our histories, protecting our medicines. You know, all of these things are things that I feel very, very passionate about. And so many other two-spirited people. And so you see a lot of us on the front lines doing a lot of land defense, water protection work, doing workshops and education, writing. A lot of us are becoming, you know, are sharing our stories and getting that recognition. You know, I think that was part of the prophecy, I think, like part of us relighting the sacred fire. You know, it really needed us to keep it going and keep it lit when others were feeling very defeated. You know, we were always still there with that fire and with that passion to keep community strong and to address things when we felt weak, to step in when others were afraid, and help build courage and bravery. Because one thing that being two-spirited, you know, there's so many stories of bravery, you know, being able to, like, you know, sharing stories of what it was like not having any support from anyone, even in your family. And that's what it feels like sometimes when you're on the front lines, is that, you know, you're waiting for that support. You're waiting for somebody to listen, you know, and you're doing everything you possibly can to survive. You know, it's a feeling that we feel all too regularly. And so it's not a surprise that we find ourselves there, wanting to do something for a community, wanting to protect, put ourselves in the line, and sacrifice ourselves a lot. We sacrifice ourselves in emotional labor. We sacrifice ourselves physically. And yet we bear the most violence. And so I right there, it's a lesson and a reminder. It's like two-spirited people who are dealing the most violence and oppression in our communities are the ones who are doing the most to protect us. I think that says a lot about what we're doing and what we're allowing to happen. And it maybe draws the mirror back onto our community and say, like, how come there's just a bunch of two-spirited people, like, trying to get shit done? And, you know, that other people need to step their game up. You know, like I said, we're the reminders, we're the center's ones to keep those from wandering from the center. And right now, the protecting the land is the center of our communities, getting that land back, having our rights recognized, reclaiming our languages, parenting. You know, a lot of two-spirited people are adopting and fostering. I've considered fostering it myself. I don't have kids of my own. I don't know if I will. But I feel like very inclined to become a parent eventually someday, you know, and a lot of two-spirit people are figuring out, like, how can we support child welfare? How can we support women who are being violent, or women who are being, like, inflicted violence? And, you know, making sure that two-spirited experiences are being told and shared and heard. You know, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of energy. That's a lot of time invested. And, you know, at the same time, just trying to make sure that we have food on the table, and supporting each other and making sure that, you know, we get to enjoy life too. It's hard, because we see that there's so much that needs to be done.
It feels like a mountain, but it also feels like a mountain that we can tackle. Mm-hmm. Together. And I think, like, one organization at a time, we can try to do that. And for myself, I know that this conversation has given me a lot of insight into my own ignorance and how I need to address that and how I need to move forward in my own world and with my own children and the people around me. I wanted to wrap up this podcast with one last question to you. I know that you have many roles and many hats in environmental justice, and you're the co-founder of Red Rising Magazine. You've worked with Lunascatan and many other organizations you've partnered with in land defense and water issues and rights. I'm wondering what kind of suggestions you would give Two-Spirit youth that want to get involved or have felt the same kind of calling that you have had to be this defender of the land, if for lack of a better word. I know English doesn't translate as beautifully as our Nihalin or Anishinaabemowin languages do, but but that's essentially what we're doing. We're fighting for our relatives.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just, every time I think of, you know, this question around like, what would you say to other two-spirited youth? And I always imagine like, you know, talking to my younger self. And all I can think about is just, you know, don't give up yet. That this life is beautiful. It's a gift, and that Creator is giving you the most beautiful gift to give to any human being. And that it's our job to show the world what that is. Yeah. Sorry, I don't want to get so sappy, but like, you know, I think
it's a heavy thing, so, though, right?
It is. And it's, young people are affected so much. And I just want them to know that they're loved, they're cherished, they're beautiful, and they're needed. And we're waiting. And we want to learn, and we want to be better people.
It's tough when you're thinking about like, what do you do? We have a whole checklist of things that you do, but at the end of the day, I think that that just sums up what's important, right? And knowing that can help you tackle just about anything. So, Negosane, thank you so much, and Anaskamitin for being a part of this podcast. I think this conversation is just a lot to reflect on, and I'm so thankful that you were able to come and talk with us today, and then also make this public to our viewers and our listeners, I guess.
Of course.
And as I've often been told, that the conversation never really ends, and definitely the conversation doesn't end here. So stay tuned for our next episode.
And that's our show. You've been listening to Napawi Tamak, Napawi Tan. Special thanks this week goes out to Desmond Travers, who beaded that beautiful medallion you see in our logo, and Leonard Sumner for singing our intro and outro music. This has been a podcast by the Lake Winnipeg Indigenous Collective. You can learn more about us, the artists, and interviewers, from our website, lwic.org. Of course, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and please link, subscribe to our podcast, and share with the people you know and love. And we'll see you next time. Across the line, I'm not into law and order when it doesn't value mine. I know this is borrowed time, so I stay up on the grind, investing in my mind. It's not big paradigms. I have walked a narrow line, vision quest for the divine, necessary sacrifice for the blessings in my life. Though I recognize prayers can be weaponized, keep a peaceful state of mind as I send them to the sky. Hey, I bet you too long, you doing it none. Me, hey, beige, you going cocky, I bet you too what. Major way, come make a mission, missing on Nick. Gigi doing in a nanish. Dan is a shinkega, chin and nan a thing. Kishpin kikenda mung, gigi doing a nun. Akanake go kikenda, minishin a katego ma kig. Kishpin wanted to wong, gigi doing a nun. The bishop gone, they wanted to wong.